It is Friday, June 7th, 2024, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Today, something new, chocolate from Onyx.
There's a lot of chemical reactions involved in roasting. There's, you know, physics and, I guess, mechanical engineering kind of stuff in terms of, like, refining and particle size reduction.
Plus something not as new, the Northwest Arkansas Hand Weavers Guild marks 75 years.
My first interest was sparked when I was at the Smithsonian in Washington, and I saw a loom, an old loom, being used. And I fell in love with the loom more than what was being woven.
And a new approach to an existing challenge, food insecurity in Arkansas.
We'll be teaming up with the Northwest Arkansas Food Bank. Mm-hmm. And through them, well, there's two different things that we're going to try to do. Outreach. One is through pop-up markets that we're going to actually be going to the neighborhoods.
Right now, the hour's news.
Northwest Arkansas Pride returns June 28th through the 30th for its 20th annual parade and festival. Other weekend events include the 4th annual Trans March, Glitterville at George's Majestic Lounge, and High Tea Dance and Pool Party at Mount Sequoia. More at nwapride.org or NWA Equality's Facebook or Instagram.
This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, June 7th, 2024. I'm Kyle Kellums, and this is 91.3 KUAF Fayetteville, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Ahead this hour, something relatively new for Onyx, chocolate. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth helps us explore how that coffee lab is expanding. And then something not so new, the Northwest Arkansas Hand Weavers Guild marking a 75th anniversary with a traveling exhibit. And then also something new, a new way to fight food insecurity. That's all coming up. But first, we welcome Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics back to the show. Happy June, Michael.
Well, happy June. I hope you had a good break. Not all of us were able to travel around to hot spots and eat and drink and be merry. But anyway, glad you're back.
Well, thank you. I don't think there was too much jealousy in that. No, I had a wonderful time, but it's always great to be back. And speaking of back, Fort Smith Metro home sales up. They're back. They're back up 9% through April. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think I don't really have a thought on that, expert. Some of the folks I've talked to suggest that there's a little bit more inventory come on the market. People are now kind of accustomed to the relatively higher interest rates and have kind of come around to the belief that they're not going to go down anytime soon. So, there was a period there people were going to kind of wait and see what happened. And I've been told that there are folks that just don't think waiting and seeing is smart. They're going to either buy or sell. So we're seeing some of that. But for the first, you remember the first 2 months of the year, all the home sales numbers were down in the Fort Smith Metro area. But for the first 4 months, it's kind of interesting. And Ashley Milton, she's a broker with Chuck Fawcett Realty in Fort Smith in Northwest Arkansas. She even double checked the numbers, but there were 1,001 homes sold in the Metro in the first 4 months of 2024, the same number in the same period of 2023. That rarely happens,
wow.
But yeah, it did on this time. But those home sales values were up 8.6, almost 9%, thanks primarily to some large gains in Crawford and Sebastian County. Sebastian County home sales were 497 in that 4 month period. That's above 414, same period of last year. The sales value in that period was up 19.2%. The home sales numbers in Crawford County had 218 home sales in the four-month period, above 195 in the same period of last year. And also another coincidental number, their home sales values in that four-month period were also up 19.2%. But so the first 4 months, 2 months, as I've said before, I don't really like to say that's a trend, but we're 4 months into the year. There isn't anything on the horizon, knock on wood, in terms of economics, local, regional, or state or national, that should throw too much of a kink into things. So maybe we'll see, the numbers up. Remember last year, there was almost a 15% decline in home sales and a 12% decline in the value of home sales. Right. So maybe if this trend continues, that 2023 will be the only blip in a what's been a relatively long period of home sales gains.
Well, let's stay with numbers. The Fort Smith Metro building activity down and down a bit, but as you always tell us, you know, you've got to remember that we're coming off a pretty big year or period for building activity in the Fort Smith Metro.
So let's put that in the context first, because that's a good point. In 2020, Fort Smith Metro building permits combined for the year, that's, and we look at Fort Smith, Greenwood, and Van Buren, but there was $266 million in 2020. In 2023, just a few years later, it's $521 million. That's a significant jump in anybody's book. So it's been just a hot record pace in the last few years. So, and as you said, you and I both discussed that or kind of questioned how long can it continue. But through May in those cities, yeah, the permit value year to date is $103.4 million. That's down almost 60%, 59.4% from that same period in 2023, from the first 5 months. And a big part of that decline, and this is just kind of the way it works, you know, as Fort Smith goes, the Fort Smith numbers impact the regional numbers quite a bit. And the Fort Smith numbers, the permit values, are down almost 62%. So it's not a surprise that the overall numbers are down. Huge expansion of the Simmons Food Plant in Van Buren. This huge expansion of the Mercy Hospital in Fort Smith, and that's still ongoing, but a lot of the large permits for that have already been issued in previous years. Some of the big growth out at Chaffee Crossing has already hit, although I'm hearing rumors from some residential developers, commercial developers, that when they see more about what this pilot training center will really be, you know, some of that development may continue. So I don't know if there's a pause in the market waiting to see really what happens with that. There's going to be millions, tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, of construction in the next few years at that Foreign Pilot Training Center. If Fort Smith records that, we're going to see another big blip on the positive side.
Well, speaking of that Foreign Pilot Training Center, there's this military overlay district that could be part of it, but we're still sort of in a holding pattern with that?
Yeah, no pun intended. Yes, it's pretty complicated. Just to jump to the chase, there's military compatibility over area overlay district. First of all, we finally learned that the military did not ever approach the city to put this in place. This is the city's doing this because they think it's important to show the military that we want to be a good host, a good neighbor. And so they've been working on this overlay district for quite a while. They've made a lot of changes to it based on feedback from developers, but they're still in the overlay district. Addresses security issues, addresses noise, addresses lighting in those areas. Now, one of the interesting things about it is the city has really made all of the city limits and the ETJ, the extraterritorial jurisdiction that they have some control over in terms of planning. They've made that the whole area an overlay district, which we in the media and some developers have yet to get kind of an answer as to why that's necessary. But there's also some issues about what's called due process that people have brought up, that, you know, you are telling me that this land that I've been holding to develop, I can only develop a small part of it or none of it, or there's very significant restrictions that reduce my value. And so talked to an attorney, John Alford, who's been at many of these board meetings, trying to get the city to at least be not vague about some of these new proposals, new restrictions, some of the language. For example, there's one thing that city board, if there's a foreign entity sale of property, the city board has to prove it, but they don't really say what's a foreign entity. Is that, you know, a British company that has a 5% interest?
Right.
Is that a foreign entity? What is a foreign entity? So there needs to be some language that clarifies that. So, but the city board is supposed to vote on it this week. They've tabled it again. There was a board member who couldn't make the meeting who wanted to vote. This is the second time they've delayed a vote on it for that reason. It's supposed to come back up June 18th, and so we'll see. But anyway, this attorney I visited with it wasn't a threat. It was just kind of a statement of fact that if the board were to pass this proposal as it is now, this overlay district as is written now, that there could be legal action. They might take him to court because he thinks there is a due process claim. I'm oversimplifying that,
right.
But he thinks there's a due process claim. And so there's not only the layer of just the board consideration, there could be a legal layer to it later.
Quickly, one other item. You know, you and I have been talking over the past several weeks about the Fort Chaffee Redevelopment Authority. It was developed. It has four, you know, entities. They have all said they would like it to dissolve, that their purpose has been fulfilled. What's the latest there?
They're set to have some the first dissolution meeting of all parties, including the FCRA, on June the 10th. The media was initially invited, but then Daniel Mann, executive director of the FCRA, Fort Chaffee Redevelopment Authority, said, no, we don't want the media there initially. Didn't really explain why, other than saying that we needed to develop a framework for our discussions before we have more discussions. I'm sure that means something, but I don't know what it means. Long story short, this first meeting is now going to be at the city offices. We have since been invited to attend. City Administrator Carl Gefkin invited us to attend. He said as long as the meetings are at the city and city offices, the media will be able to attend. I don't know if Mr. Mann or Mr. Dean Gibson, who's the chair of the FCRA, if they will stay at the meeting with the media there, if they'll walk out. That's going to be interesting, but we'll know on the afternoon of June 10th whether our attendance scuttles the first meeting, first dissolution meeting.
Well, I'm sure we'll talk about that a week from today.
Yeah, well, one way or the other.
Exactly. You can read about all of this and more at talkbusiness.net. Michael, good to hear your voice again. Let's do this again in a week.
On the calendar.
Howdy, folks. This is Dave Smith, host of Ozark Highlands Radio. On this week's show, we feature a family band, Love Holler, recorded live on our stage at the Ozark Folk Center State Park. Mark Jones has found an early recording of one of our favorite singers. And folklorist Charlie Sandage gives a perspective on both the corporeal and spiritual bounty of barns. That's this week on Ozark Highlands Radio.
Ozark Highlands Radio, tomorrow night, beginning at 6. A pleasant Friday. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Food insecurity remains a challenge for Arkansas. Income, transportation, and policy can all be roadblocks for people trying to have enough healthy food to eat consistently. A pair of Northwest Arkansas restaurant owners are starting their new way to help in the fight against food insecurity. Juan Behenna and Susanna Ramirez Behenna own Tula on the Fayetteville Square and are behind the nonprofit Casa Dos Alas. On the latest episode of the podcast District 3, they discussed their new effort. And in this edited excerpt from that 48-minute conversation, Susanna and Juan talk about a big fundraising event they have later this month for the nonprofit in Bentonville and smaller pop-up markets they'll be launching in August in area neighborhoods.
We'll be teaming up with the Northwest Arkansas Food Bank. Mm-hmm. And through them, well, there's two different things that we're going to try to do outreach. One is through pop-up markets that we're going to actually be going to the neighborhoods of people.
That's cool.
Which we thought it was pretty cool because a lot of, you know, and you know, out now, you know, my family's Mexican, but you know, you go to Mexican, you got markets everywhere, right?
Mercados.
You know, they got the mercados that are coming to you. You got the tianguis that's coming to you, and you get everything that you can in these markets. Mm-hmm. Well, we want people to, feel familiar with that, and they're going to be able to have this outside their house, literally, right? Mm-hmm. That's our goal, is to have these pop-up markets, and then, you know, teaming up with different people to be able to include items that are more, you know, they're more accustomed to.
Mm-hmm. And we like to say, ever since we started this, we like to say celebrating our culture, because mm-hmm. that is very important to us as well. Mm-hmm. Whenever we talk about our food and what we eat.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. So, and then the other one is to the whole celebrating our culture part is we're going to have a culinary maker series. And that's what I'm excited about. Where we're going to, you know, teach families how to cook. Mm-hmm. Because I look at it too. It's like, you know, I didn't learn how to cook until I was in college. We want people to learn how to cook. And because it was always, you know, and then I say this story all the time. It was like when Susana met my grandma, she'd be like, oh, you know, nice to meet you. And first time she met her. And
she's like, mucho gusto. Vente a la cocina. And I was like, okay.
You know, like, go serve Juan a plate. And I was like, that's right. You know, like, grandma's looking out.
Oh, yeah.
But it was one of those where culturally we're still kind of in that mindset, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's still like, the guy, the man's the provider, figures that out. The woman's the one that should be taking care of the household, mm-hmm. cooking and figuring
not
all
my
that
culture.
Out.
No, I'm just kidding.
So it's one of those where we're trying to make people understand that part, or that it's okay. It is okay to learn how to cook as a family, to enjoy that. Yeah. But also, too, is, you know, we were just talking about it. It's like, I have nieces and nephews that they rather eat Raising Cane's than Mexican food. And it pisses me off because I'm like,
you're going 7 Brew.
I know. Yeah. It's just like, and it just gets me mad that they're not wanting to embrace, you know, something so beautiful that we have. So I want people to really do that. And then also the people that are not Hispanic to learn, like Susana was saying, learn about us. I think that people are more willing to help and to do something if they understand you and understand what you need.
Y'all are focused on the Latino Hispanic community.
Yes, absolutely. And these pop-up markets will happen every 2 months.
Correct.
Every third week?
Third week of the month.
Yeah.
And do y'all have set dates yet or close
Yeah, so
dates?
The first one will be the third week of August, which kind of lines up because it's the week right after school starts for the kids. And then we kind of, and then the next one will be in October and then in December to end the year. And then 2025 is going to be the exact same schedule.
Did y'all find the the locations already?
Yeah, so the first one that we're planning on doing is going to be over by Bayari in East Springdale.
So who's helping with all of this? Is it like the staff of y'all's restaurant, or is, because I know it has to be more than just you two, because it's a lot to do for just two people, right?
Yes, yeah. So we started a board. I mean, we've gone through the whole process, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's like we're getting people, sponsors. The good thing is we're in the hospitality industry, so there's a lot of people that want to help, right, with food. So a lot of the main sponsors that we have are helping us with some of those tools to be able to make it happen. Okay. But yeah, and definitely we're gonna depend on
volunteers
and people that are wanting to be a part of this. So if anybody wants to volunteer, you know, you could go to our website.
Y'all are starting pretty much this process of this nonprofit, of this movement, with an event called Noche en Jalisco, June 15th at the Ledger in Bentonville. Can you talk about that? What is that event? What are y'all trying to do? What's it gonna look like? And where can people start signing up for that?
So you could get tickets already.
Yeah.
On our website.
Yeah, and it's going to be an immersive tequila experience. So you'll be able to taste a couple of different tequilas. Some of these are people that are not even in Arkansas, or brands that are not even in the state of Arkansas yet. Mm-hmm. So you'll be able to taste them there. And we'll have food from Tula and Lucha.
Yeah, so Lucha. So we're pretty much, you know, headlining the whole thing. So like Susana said, the brands, you're going to be able to try different tequilas that are not around here, some that are here. The food's going to be curated by Tula, Taqueria Lucha. We want people to learn about the spirit of Mexico and, you know, and also introduce our foundation that way, because it's, you know, nobody wants to go to an event and it'd be boring. So we're like, what's a better way to do it than tequila? It's like that way people can learn about it, learn about the process of making tequila. You know, it's almost like the way that we're looking at doing this, it's almost like a museum-like kind of experience where you're going to learn about the whole process from agave fields all the way to barreling and all that. So it's going to be pretty cool.
You can hear the entire conversation between Susana Ramirez-Bejena and Juan Bejena with the hosts of District 3 Podcast in the latest episode of the District 3 Podcast. It's available at KUAF.com or wherever you already get your podcasts. The conversation was recorded in the Furman Garner Performance Studio at KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large.
All the world of stage, and all the men and women merely players.
You're listening to E.H. Southern with a Victor recording from 1920, and you're on the Soundbeat. Shakespeare's Globe Theater was the very definition of a fire hazard, constructed of wood with a thatched roof. So firing off a cannon from indoors wouldn't seem like a great idea, with crowds of 1,500 and two small doors serving as exits. Still, they did just that in 1613. London didn't have a fire brigade at the time, and eyewitness John Chamberlain claimed the entire building burned to the ground in less than an hour. Miraculously, no one was killed or even seriously hurt. According to Chamberlain, only one man had his breeches set on fire. That would perhaps have broiled him if he had not, by the benefit of a provident wit, put it out with a bottle of ale. The Seven Ages of Man monologue comes from Act 2, Scene 7 of As You Like It. Shakespeare probably wrote the play in 1599, the year the globe was built. The theater's motto? Totus mundus agit histrionem, meaning the whole world is a playhouse. Now, where have we heard that? Soundbeat is produced at the Belfer Audio Archive, Syracuse University Library. I'm Brett Barry.
A Little Rock judge is ruling in favor of the ACLU in their case against the Arkansas Department of Finance and Administration regarding its emergency gender marker restriction. The court's decision was based on administrative grounds, explaining the DFA failed to provide enough evidence to signify the previous rule caused imminent peril to Arkansans. The judge also discredited the DFA's lack of proper notice and solicitation of public comment beforehand. This decision will require the DFA to temporarily revert back to its previous policy of allowing transgender, non-binary, and intersex Arkansans to self-select their gender marker without need for documentation. Wednesday's injunction relief will only be effective until the proposed rule is passed formally through appropriate procedure, which is expected to happen at the end of this month. This morning, the DFA held a public hearing for the proposed permanent rule change regarding gender on licenses and IDs in Little Rock. All interested parties may continue to express views on the proposed rule by submitting written comments to the Department of Finance and Administration via mail or by emailing public.comment@dfa.arkansas.gov. You can find those details as well as a YouTube link to the public hearing at OzarksAtLarge.com. Onyx Coffee Lab is well known for its specialty coffee, but now the Rogers-based company is moving into another specialty food market, chocolate. In April, Terroir by Onyx, the company's chocolate brand, was named a winner in the 2024 Good Food Awards for two of its chocolate bars. Preston Stewart is Onyx Director of Chocolate, and he stopped by the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk with Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth about the new venture, including a chocolate-focused cafe in downtown Springdale. Stewart began the conversation by talking about his unusual journey to chocolatier from starting as a chemistry student at the University of Arkansas.
There's a lot of chemical reactions involved in roasting. There's, you know, physics and, I guess, mechanical engineering kind of stuff in terms of, like, refining and particle size reduction. And one of our long-term goals is to be able to start purchasing both cocoa and coffee from some of the producers that we already buy coffee from. They grow in similar parts of the world, but specialty coffee likes to have high elevation. The cool nights kind of stress the plants out and force them to put more energy into the fruit, the coffee cherry. Cocoa, on the other hand, kind of prefers to be more hot and humid and true tropical. So although they don't always grow side by side, they can grow in the same plots of land if there's some elevation change. So a long-term goal is going to be able to, like, start purchasing both cocoa and coffee together and maybe importing them together. We're currently massively a coffee company and a little bit of a chocolate company. Yeah. So that I always tell people, in terms of just for context, like, the roasting team for coffee, they'll roast more coffee beans in like 4 or 5 hours than I do cocoa in a full year. So there's a pretty big difference in scale. At the moment, we're not like doing direct trade for cocoa in the same way that we are coffee. It's not really feasible in terms of the purchasing, the amount that we're buying. But, you know, Onyx has been around for, I guess, 12 years now. Yeah, stepping into a pre-existing strong company, I was given a lot of freedom to create something from scratch. And so being kind of the solo mind in the development of the terroir chocolate concept was, it was really nice, like having, you know, resources to purchase things that we needed. And then also like having this, a branding team, packaging geniuses, I would call them, to come up with a really cool package design and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it turned out really great. And the customers that Onyx had already curated, you know, they already were purchasing high quality coffee and kind of expected to pay a premium for a premium product. So bringing chocolate on board as another category of a premium product, I think fit the customer base pretty well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you have reason to be optimistic because, you know, Onyx is opening this new cafe that's, it's got a chocolate-centric kind of angle to it. Can you tell me a little bit about that cafe opening up in Springdale?
Yeah, so it's in downtown Springdale on Emma. Used to be the First Security Bank building. Okay. Primarily, like on the ground floor, it's going to be another Onyx Cafe with some beautiful architecture, fun seating, great menu. The food program there is going to be a little bit more involved as well. In the basement, what used to be part of like safety deposit boxes in the bank vault, that's going to be the home of chocolate production. I'm pretty pumped about it because for the last, you know, 3.5 years, been making chocolate for Onyx, but it's been, you know, kind of tucked away in a room in a warehouse and not necessarily something that the public has been able to see. And so even this last month, we were at the Specialty Coffee Association Expo, SCA, up in Chicago. We took a team and had a booth, and we're serving coffee and sampling teas, and we brought the chocolate as well. And I went, and a good amount of the people at the show were like, oh, I didn't even know you guys did chocolate. And so it's still – we're still like, you know, putting it out there and educating people that it's a component of the Onyx portfolio, I guess. So having it, you know, on display and like in a place where people can see, hear, smell, and taste chocolate, I think that's going to be a big step forward for our consumers locally, especially to be able to experience the chocolate arm of Onyx. And then as we do that, we'll have, you know, a better opportunity to do photo and video in a space that's more aesthetically pleasing than a room in a warehouse. And so we'll be able to create more content around the brand as well.
Well, and then, you know, some good content for that marketing also, as you were the recipient or a finalist for the Good Food Awards. You know, you've got the two chocolate bars here. So can you tell me about those awards and kind of what you guys submitted and why you think it placed so high?
Yeah. So we submitted four. Here, I'll open some up and share.
Please, yeah.
So this one that we're snacking on, this is actually, of the two winners, this is the one that I'm a little bit more proud of.
Okay.
This is a 69% dark chocolate. The cocoa beans come from Madagascar. So it's just organic cacao, organic sugar, and a little bit of added cocoa butter. As a chocolate maker and a purist, I guess, you know, winning an award for a plain dark chocolate, like without any flavorings or inclusions, as we call them, added into the mix is to me, that's a little bit higher praise because you have nothing to hide behind.
Yeah.
And so like the other bar that we won for has tons of added ingredients and flavors to kind of make it stand out and replicate a different flavor profile. But this one is just a dark chocolate for the purists. So yeah, we submitted four bars, two of them won. This Madagascar dark chocolate, and then also a chai milk chocolate. And so being with Onyx, I wanted to create some flavor profiles that our customers would already be really familiar with. And so there's kind of what I consider the cafe collection with. Mm-hmm. We've got a mocha, a chai milk chocolate, a matcha white chocolate, and then a cappuccino white chocolate. So some of the drinks that people might get when they come to the shop, I kind of wanted to replicate those flavors in chocolate form.
Yeah. And so when we're tasting this one, can you walk me through what are we tasting for? It's the plain, you know, it's the 69% dark chocolate.
Yeah.
What do you taste for? What is a tip for a novice, you know, a trash chocolate eater like me?
No. So chocolate's one of those five senses things. So you kind of do want to, you know, hear a good snap that's indicative of a proper temper. You can obviously smell and taste or begin to expect what the flavors are going to be like. In terms of tactile, it should be, if it's intentionally smooth, like there's no added ingredients to give it texture, it should be so smooth that you don't feel any grit. Mm. Our tongues can detect particle size up to about 30 microns. So we want to be sub 30 microns is kind of the goal. Yeah, taste, we've got kind of a base background chocolate note that you would expect, pretty cocoa-y, kind of fudgy. But the cacao from Madagascar in particular, to me, has a fairly bright, like cherry/raspberry kind of note, red fruit, if you want to call it that. And for me, like any time I've tried chocolate from other chocolate makers, this origin from Madagascar is often like a standout because it is so like punchy and bright and in your face, and a pretty stark contrast from the typical one note that you get from what mass-produced chocolate.
When you go and pick up a chocolate bar, or when you say, I'm going to eat this, do you tend towards the dark chocolate, or do you go for kind of wild, crazy flavors, or what do you like?
Usually, if I'm like trying a chocolate maker's bars for the first time, I'll usually get one of each. I'll get like a classic dark that's somewhere around 70%, and then maybe something wild and crazy that I've never tried before. Like, there's some chocolate makers in Southeast Asia that use a lot of ingredients that we've never even heard of. And so it's like, this sounds wild. I'm going to just try it. And so yeah. I like to experiment, but also trying to stick with the classics as more of like a benchmark.
Yeah. All right. And then moving on to the more experimental of the two.
Yeah. So this one's kind of fun. The cocoa is from India. It's kind of it's not a very large volume producing country. But there was some back in the colonial days when India was British occupied, I think there was some cocoa planted in the southern part of India where it's a little bit more hot and humid and tropical. So yeah, the cacao on this one is from India, and then it's still got organic cane sugar. This one is a milk chocolate, so it also has milk powder added as well. But then to give it the chai component, and this one you can really get it on the nose especially.
Oh, yeah.
There's two different chai blends. One of a local company that we work with quite a bit for our tea is Savoy Tea. You've probably heard of them. So they have a great sourcing program and teas from all over the world, a couple different tea shops as well in the region. And so utilizing a couple different chai blends, I refined that into the chocolate. So the smoothness that you get from the chocolate is, even though it has cinnamon, cardamom, clove, black tea, peppercorn, all of those things have been refined and smoothed out into the milk chocolate. So you don't get any, you know, grittiness or crunchiness, except for a little bit of pink peppercorn that was sprinkled on the back of the bar intentionally. And that gives it a little bit of like a juniper or piney kind of citrusy notes. So this one's got a lot going on flavor-wise compared to the purity of the first one.
Definitely tastes the chai in there. Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah. How do you come up with the ideas for the chocolate? Like, this isn't something that I would naturally think of as a chocolate bar. Mm-hmm. Or a flavor that I would think of. So how do you, I don't know, how is that palate developed and how do you come up with new ideas?
Yeah, so this one, along with some of the others, were kind of onyx-centric flavors. Mm-hmm. And then also I wanted to, you know, just have a broad flavor profile so that, you know, if the whole selection of 12 or 13 bars is in front of you, you're bound to find something that you like, whether you're a dark chocolate purist, if you've got a couple plain chocolate bars. If you are watching your sugar intake and more of a eat chocolate for its healthy purposes, we've got an ultra dark 86% with some cocoa nibs sprinkled on there for crunch. We've got a spicy one because spicy chocolate's popular, a classic milk chocolate for the people that are less adventurous, and also, like, I think a lot of times kids are, you know, intimidated by dark chocolate, so that one's kind of a starter for the kiddos, and then like, oh, that's not bitter, and then I'll give them a different dark chocolate that's on the sweet side, and they're like, oh, that's not bitter either. I'm like, yeah. I mean, oftentimes the bitterness that comes with dark chocolate is because they're using low-quality cocoa and over-roasting it and getting that kind of charred one-note flavor, but it doesn't have to be that way. If you buy good beans and treat them well, you'll have a good result.
What do you hope this company, you know, you're at that small sliver of what Onyx is producing right now. Where do you hope this aspect of the company grows and what your role grows into in the next maybe 5-10 years? I don't know.
Yeah, I think the new space in Springdale, which, knock on wood, is going to open later this year, I think that's really going to give us an opportunity to showcase chocolate as more than just a chocolate bar, which that's kind of been our primary vehicle so far. And then also over 90% of our customers are across the country and somewhat international. And so I'm really pumped about the opportunity to do more videos and educational aspects and just kind of like talking about the process of making chocolate or talking about cocoa and its role as both a commodity crop and a specialty potential. So that the educational aspect of chocolate production, but also cacao and cocoa processing, how it grows, what goes into it, what makes it special versus the lower quality versions that exist in the market elsewhere. Yeah, I'm excited to talk about that, and then also just to take specialty chocolate and transform it into specialty confections as well. So I think being able to elevate the quality of the flavor of, you know, confectionery products by starting with high quality bean to bar chocolate is going to be hopefully equally eye-opening and flavor explosion as the bars themselves.
That was Preston Stewart, Director of Chocolate for Onyx, speaking with Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth. Their conversation took place in the Karen Taha News Studio at KUAF.
I'm crushing on me. I'm crushing on me.
You call them self-love pop bangers?
Yeah, self-love anthems, yes.
All about what motivates Meghan Trainor.
I write these anthems for myself, but also for strangers out there.
Meghan Trainor's new album, Timeless, and the latest news, Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
I've been singing these love songs all to myself, bought a blue bag from Tiffany.
Weekend Edition, tomorrow morning, beginning at 7. This is Ozarks at Large. Let's prepare ourselves for one of the last weekends of spring, and we're going to have some help with Becca Martin-Brown, the arts and entertainment editor for the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Becca, I was on vacation last week. Happy to be talking with you again. You're in your office in Bella Vista, correct?
I am. And we're going to do several short things today because there's kind of a theme. It'll okay. make sense.
Okay.
Do you remember the film Mr. Christmas that was shot in Eureka Springs in 2004?
I do.
I was a PA and then second AD on that film. There was a scene where the much coveted bicycle was purchased by someone who had money and a beautiful vintage car. And the boy rolled the bicycle out of the store. And that boy, who was 12 years old, is now Joseph Scott Ford, not Joe Ford. Mm-hmm. And he is a playwright who has written the show that is on stage at Theater Squared. I love these connections. He went off to Nashville, came back to Little Rock, is raising two kids there. And the name of the show at Theater Squared is Responders, which is about two small town paramedics who are the first to arrive at what he calls a macabre scene.
Oh.
The local star reporter arrives to film the whole fiasco, and things go from bad to ridiculous. He says it's a dark comedy. He says some situations, for whatever reason, are funny, some are not. But even the situations that aren't funny can become funny if you handle them a certain way.
Was this workshopped here during one of the new play festivals?
It was
in
2022.
Yes.
And this is its world premiere as a full production. So it is on stage every day but Monday through June 30th at Theater Squared, and tickets start at $43.
And I imagine since it's the world premiere, he might be looking at this, trying to look at it with fresh eyes when an audience is in the room, and there might be still some tweaking that he's doing.
He says that every night, every audience affects the show.
Wow. Interesting.
Tonight and tomorrow night in Fayetteville, there's a little theater company called the Smokehouse Players.
Right.
They tend to do classic theater. And this one is Neil Simon's Last of the Red Hot Lovers.
From 1969.
Here's the thing about Neil Simon. He was like the gold standard on Broadway for two decades. And this is a little bit lesser done show. You know, he did Brighton Beach and the Sunshine Boys and Barefoot in the Park and The Odd Couple. This is a little bit lesser known one. And it's about an aging restaurant manager who really wants to have that one incredible affair, just one, that he can remember for the rest of his life.
It's a comedy.
It's a comedy. 7:30 today and tomorrow, Ozark Mountain Smokehouse in Fayetteville. It is free. They'd love to have your donation because they operate out of their own pockets.
And no reservations.
And you can email smokehouseplayers@gmail.com if you need to know more. And we're going to peek ahead to next week because there are two interesting productions going on. One is Little Women. Little Women is being done by a company called Natural State Performing Arts. It's a new dance studio in Bella Vista, and they have written choreography to tell the story of Little Women and selected music to tell the story. And so this will be its world premiere. So that happens at 7 o'clock on June 13th and 14th, two nights only, Arkansas Arts Academy in Rogers. It's $20, and their website is naturalstateperformingarts.com. And then there's another company called NWA Lights Up Theater, which has been around for a couple of years in Tawnytown. And they are doing their very own musical version of The Shepherd of the Hills. Now, I'm not sure that half the people listening to us have ever heard of The Shepherd of the Hills in any context except a place in Branson. The Shepherd of the Hills was a really popular novel at the turn of the 20th century. Harold Bell Wright came to the Ozarks to recover, to get away from it all. I'm not sure what all he needed to get away from in 1907, but okay. And the people he met and the things he experienced became this book called The Shepherd of the Hills. And it's being put on by two 19-year-olds who run this theater company and a cast that includes all ages, including the person who plays the shepherd, who's like 68 years old. Is that not the coolest thing? That's... I mean, talk about community theater.
Yeah, no kidding. Right.
So this happens one day only, 1 o'clock and 5:30 on June 15th at St. Joseph Catholic Hall in Tawnytown.
One day only. All right.
It's free.
It's free.
But you should get tickets. NWALightsUpTheater.GoDaddySites.com, you know, to make sure you have a seat. And you can find out more on Facebook at NWA Lights Up. And then there's one art show I want to be sure you go to. Once upon a time in Northwest Arkansas, there was a potter named Ray Dunn. And she made beautiful things and funny things because she'd make like a mug. And then on the inside of the handle, there'd be a bear wrapped around the handle. Well, she's gone. And this is a retrospective exhibit of her work. It's the last of her work. It came out of her now late husband's house. So go out to Ozark Folkways. They're only open from noon to four, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It's free. I think some of this work is for sale. And then you have a piece of Northwest Arkansas history that you wouldn't have had otherwise.
And the best way to get there is take Old Highway 71.
Oh, that's a piece of Northwest Arkansas history, too.
Exactly, exactly. When is the, what are the dates on this again?
It's through June 16th.
Okay, very good.
So it's basically this weekend and next weekend. And then, like so many things, gone forever.
Well, you're not gone forever. You'll be back next Friday.
You can't get rid of me that easy. Come on.
Beck Martin Brown is the Arts and Entertainment Editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. This is Ozarks at Large. Big thank yous to everybody who came to the Fayetteville Public Library last night for the conversation that I was able to have with author Taylor Jenkins Reid. Thank you, as always, to the staff at the library for being so wonderful in every way as hosts for events like these. And big thanks to Taylor Jenkins Reid for her great conversation, her answers to some pretty great audience questions. And then she took time to talk with many of the 700 people that were there last night to hear her talk. And then she signed copies of her bestsellers like The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, Daisy Jones and the Six, Malibu Rising, and Carrie Soto is Back. It was a pretty cool evening. Now, if you're in that library in the next few weeks, be sure to spend some time with the exhibit of art created by members of the Northwest Arkansas Hand Weavers Guild. To mark the Guild's 75th anniversary, the exhibit includes a wide variety of examples of what an artist can do with material and a loom. Deborah Thomas is a member of the Guild, and she recently gave me a guided tour through that exhibit.
There's color, there's texture, there are some that are figures, others that are designs. It just really shows off the talent that we have in this area.
Let's take a couple of pieces and just talk about them.
All right, pick one.
Oh, I pick one. Well, okay, I'm going to start with this bold sort of fan-like one that's down here to our left.
All right.
It's... different shades of red, and I imagine the best way to describe this is it's as if someone is maybe holding up two fans. Mm-hmm.
Yes, this is done by Jacqueline Kurtz, who's a weaver in Rogers, and it's called bound weave, but the way she's done it is she's gathered it up to make a real swirl, a swirling design, and it's got lots of red colors, different red colors, and is a very striking piece, I agree. It's one of the most striking we have in the exhibit.
You called this a bound weave?
It's a bound weave.
What does that mean?
Well, how technical do you want me to get?
Let's see. Let's go.
I think so. Well, when you weave, you have warp and you have weft, and those two things cross to make cloth. With bound weaves, you don't see the warp. You only see the weft. And so with a regular cloth, you see both of those threads crossing. In this, you don't see the structure underneath.
And is that achieved through a different technique?
No, it's just a... It's still weaving. It's just the way you beat and the way you put it together, and it really does make a striking piece.
I'm going to show you just how ignorant I am about mm-hmm. this art form. The way you beat?
Yes, the loom generally has a beater, and that beater is what pushes the weft into place, and. It's a beater. Yeah, you beat. And that's the name of it. And so every time you insert a thread into the loom, you have to move the beater to put it into place.
Okay, so if we don't see warp mm-hmm. with this one, is there an example here of art that really
sure.
shows off warp?
Well, I think if we just go right straight in front of us, here's a rug that was done by Frank Dell, who lives in Harrison. An interesting older man, and you can see that this is a rag rug, but it's very colorful and shows a pattern, and you can see both the light blue weft as well as the colorful warp in this, so you see both.
What about this one, the circular one way down here on the left that, you know, it's about the size of maybe a wall clock, and it looks like it's a landscape.
It is, it's a landscape, and that was done with wire. It's woven with wire. If you look at it closely, you can see that it is a big circle woven with wire. Yes.
And you would use a loom for that as well?
Yes. It's
not the same kind of loom.
I'm not sure exactly how this was done, but she probably kind of made a kind of improvised loom with wire and then wove it in.
Laura Redfern is a member of the Northwest Arkansas Hand Weavers Guild, and she says she became interested after seeing examples of weaving and the tools used to make the art.
My first interest was sparked when I was at the Smithsonian in Washington, and I saw a loom, an old loom, being used. And I fell in love with the loom more than what was being woven. And that's still kind of my fascination. I love the looms and the differences and how they work and all of that. But then, of course, if you love the loom, you have to learn how to weave.
Michael Scopp, another member of the guild, says he was led to weaving by his wife.
She helped me find a new passion. I suffered from PTSD as a veteran, and she knew I needed like a new outlet because I was always like do a lot of physical stuff, and she thought maybe weaving might be it. So about 7 years ago, she took me to their guild meeting, and been there ever since. It's been fun. I love it.
What hooked? What made you think, okay, this might be it?
Oh gosh, well, just. There's a rhythm to weaving, you know, either if you're warping the board or you're beating the your project, there's just like a certain rhythm and numbers. And I'm a numbers guy. You know, when you're setting something up, it could be a 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4. So it's just one of those, like, it helped me just kind of like meditate almost.
The Northwest Arkansas Hand Weavers Guild continues to mark its 75th anniversary through the summer. And Laura Redfern says there is a long history of weaving art in the Ozarks. In fact, she's co-authored a book about woven coverlets and the region.
Martha Benson and I had the great opportunity to document the coverlets in the Shiloh Museum collection.
We studied them, and if we knew the weavers and the stories, we included all of that in the book that the museum published. And then since that time, we've documented about 100 other coverlets in other museum collections in the immediate area. And one of these days, we hope fairly soon, we'll have a second book that Shiloh has agreed to publish about all those coverlets.
The exhibit at the Fayetteville Public Library covers an entire wall in the newer section of the library, and the art will be on display at the library through July. There have already been 75th anniversary exhibitions at the Bentonville and West Fork Libraries. There will be displays at the Rogers Public Library in August, at the Harrison Library in September, and at the Siloam Springs Public Library in October. And then this Tuesday, the Guild will host a hands-on demonstration in the Fayetteville Public Library from 10 until 4. And you can learn more about the group at nwahandweaversguild.org.
For the Central Arkansas Library System, I'm Mark Crist with an Encyclopedia of Arkansas Minute. An industrious bug is recognized as Arkansas's official state insect. Arkansas is one of 15 states that have so honored the honeybee. Arkansas has been a significant producer of honey for many years, at one time ranking 8th in the United States for its honey production. The Arkansas State Plant Board reports that fully one-third of the state's food crops are dependent on natural bee-borne pollination, and honeybees are credited with meeting around 80% of that goal. Representative Albert Tom Collier introduced a bill in the Arkansas General Assembly that recognizes the honeybee's importance in crop pollination, but focused mainly on the insect's productivity, attention to home defense, diligence, and hard work. Approved on February 1, 1973, Act 49 stated that this diligent and willing worker typifies the citizens of the state of Arkansas. In the 21st century, honeybees face serious threats from such things as pesticides, predators, disease, parasites, and bacteria. To learn more, visit encyclopediaofarkansas.net.
On Mondays, Ozarks at Large, from Arkansas to Publishing Icon.
We say to the reader, look, honey, there's something you can do. You don't have to be a movie star or a television interviewer. You don't have to be a best-selling author. But there's something you can do good. Let's find out what it is.
The life of Helen Gurley Brown, from birth in Green Forest to growing up in Little Rock to best-selling author to the head of Cosmopolitan magazine. She's the subject of the next visit with Randy Dixon from the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. That and much more on Monday's Ozarks at Large. And Rogers High School is accepting donations and volunteers for Benton County Tornado Relief. Rogers High is offering shelter, showers, Wi-Fi, device charging, meals to anyone displaced by the storms. You can donate non-perishable food items, toiletries, batteries, and hygiene products to 2300 South Dixieland Road in Rogers. For more information, call 636-2202. And ASPCA Disaster Response, offering animal search and rescue, pet food and supply distribution, emergency animal sheltering, animal relocation, drone search and rescue, and more for pet owners. You can request assistance at airtable.com or call 929-637-2423. Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF Fayetteville. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Today's edition of Ozarks at Large, put together in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio. Contributions to the program today provided by Daniel Carruth, Sophia Narani, Michael Tilley, Becca Martin-Brown, and Mark Crist. Our web presence is handled by Jack Travis. You can find out more about us at ozarksatlarge.com. Find full episodes of Ozarks at Large there. And you can find individual stories that you can share with links provided. Another new week of shows beginning Monday. Thanks for spending time with us.
Music Moves presents the 2024 Freedom Festival, celebrating Juneteenth, Saturday, June 15th, on the Shiloh Square in downtown Springdale. This community event features live music from Cameo, Twista, and Donnell Jones, with food trucks, giveaways, a kids zone, and more. Information at freedomfestivalar.com. The Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society's 26th season of the Summer Jazz Concert Series presents the Ted Ludwig Quartet, featuring Pat Bianchi, Paul Carr, and Stephen Pruitt, Saturday, June 15th at 7:30 p.m. at Walton Arts Center. Tickets and information available at digjazz.com/events.